The Detroit Pistons lose yet again on another offensive rebound putback game winner at the end of the game, this time from J-Dub. What's going on in these late game plays? What went wrong on this specific play? And what does it say about this team overall? We're going to talk about all that in today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. Coming up, we'll talk about Jane Ivey and how well he played in this game later on. We'll talk about some things that we saw from at least I saw from Marvin Bagley that I actually really liked seeing from him. We'll talk about some other individual performances later on. But man, I have to talk about what happened at the end of this game. So Jane Ivey fouled out at the end of this game. The Pistons lost this game by 1 point. Jane Ivey fouls out at the end of this game. Killian Hayes injures his knee. I don't know what exactly happened. It was non-contact, which is really scary. So I don't know what happened there. But both their guards now are out the game. On the possession before the last one, Kojo walks into a pull-up three that puts the Pistons up by one. So the Pistons are up by 1 point here off a Kojo pull-up three-pointer. Really nice position. There's about 7 seconds left after the OKC gets the ball back. They shoot a shot, miss it. Dort gets the offensive rebound. They tie him up for a jump ball. Now there's 7 seconds left. Jump ball between Dort and Amirouri. From here, everything goes downhill. And there's a bigger takeaway I have from this specific play. Off the jump ball, Dort wins it. He taps it kind of towards the baseline to Josh Giddey. Josh Giddey runs and tracks down the rebound. And from there, everything collapses. James Wiseman and RJ Hampton are chasing after the ball, so they end up trapping him. And on the backside rotation, because Wiseman went to go double team, Isaiah Livers correctly goes and tags on Wiseman's guy and boxes him out, which then leaves Isaiah Livers' guy uncontested on the block. Josh Giddey throws up a runner from the baseline, misses it. Now, Isaiah Livers' guy, who he left to go tag on Wiseman's guy, is open for an offensive rebound. He gets it. J-Dub puts it in. The Thunder win. What does this say? What's my bigger takeaway from this play? Well, when I first saw this play happen, without looking at the replay or anything, my immediate first thought was what we talked about in the last podcast, which was I thought that Isaiah Livers could play some four for the Pistons, but I don't think his defensive rebounding has been good enough this year in positions like this, where you can feel comfortable with that being the reality for him. That I still think that probably is true. But after watching it on the replay, you can't that should not be your takeaway on that. Isaiah Livers was the only one who did something right on this play. I really wish I could show the play on YouTube here, but I can't do that obviously for copyright reasons. But I'm going to try to paint this as best as possible for you guys over the podcast. Wiseman and Hampton are double-teaming Giddey on the baseline. Livers rotates to the middle of the key to tag on Lu Dort, who James Wiseman was guarding. That left J-Dub wide open on the block. The backside rotation has to then come and help Isaiah Livers out, or that guy is just going to be left wide open. The person who should have made that backside rotation is Corey Joseph, the Pistons' veteran locker room leader, the guy who should know what to be doing right on the floor. I think that's pretty damning. I'm not going to lie to you. The fact that the Pistons have had this exact situation happen, they've lost on multiple occasions on last-second putback jumpers from guys not being boxed out, guys not rotating. The Pistons are not a good team, but they are supposed to be a developmental team. You're supposed to be developing these basic, at least in my mind, these basic fundamentals. Basic rotations and basic fundamentals of boxing out guys, especially on last second plays, on last defensive plays of the game, everyone should be swarming to the glass. Everyone should be getting bodies on people. and this is now the like at least the third or fourth time that we've seen this kind of situation happen, and the Pistons have lost on it this year. And for this one to be due to Corey Joseph, the Pistons veteran. Now, look, I question whether Wiseman should have ever actually went and doubled. And on the strong side, Amarui is kind of in no man's land a little bit. He could probably be a little bit more physical. There's a lot of things that you could question on that final play. But for me, the fact that the Pistons veteran player does not make that weak side rotation onto the block after Isaiah Livers, who's the only one on this play, he's going to be the one that people look at and try saying it was his fault. No, he was the only person on this play who did the right thing. He immediately recognized that Wiseman went to double, and if he doesn't do that, Lu Dort gets a wide open dunk at the rim. So Livers notices that immediately off the jump ball, goes and tags on the guy rolling down from rolling down to the rim, which is Lu Dort, and he just gets nobody to help him on his backside. He's down there fighting one on two. Maybe if you have Dern in there, maybe he fights better and he can get the rebound. Probably, maybe that could happen. But even still, this probably could have still happened even if you have Dern down there, because there's a guy just wide open on the block with nobody on him. So the fact that the Pistons, this is what it says to me. I think it's completely fair to question. How do I say this without? I think it's completely fair to question the basic fundamentals, and if the Pistons are teaching these basic fundamentals, and if they're getting across. Because it's one thing, and if they're being enforced is the main thing. Because it's one thing for a rookie to make that mistake. It's one thing for a first, second-year player to make that mistake once. The Pistons have had this happen on numerous occasions. And then for it to happen involving in this game, in this play, the Pistons veteran who should know better, who should be leading by example, who should be in this rotation, who should know the rotation and be making this rotation on the weak side, the fact that even the vet isn't doing it, I think that's pretty damning. I do. I think it's pretty damning. Now, there's other things that we've seen throughout the year that have been really good. We've seen Jaden Ivey get better throughout the year. We've seen Jalen Duren get better throughout the year. I'm not saying it's all bad, but I think these situations that you continue to see happen with the young players not boxing out on critical possessions like this, again, not making great plays. These are basic fundamentals, and it's happened to the Pistons many, many times this year. This exact situation has happened over and over and over again. It's happened with young players, and now it's even happened with vets. So I think it's fair to question whether these basic fundamentals are being taught and enforced how they should be. Maybe they are. Maybe they are. We don't know. I don't know. We're not there in practices. We're not there in the meetings, etc. We don't know. But based on what we see on the film, based on what we see from the games, it seems like that's not being enforced. And when your veteran makes the mistake, I think it's even more concerning when even he's not making the basic fundamental move. That's a little concerning to me. I'm not going to lie. I've seen some other people already say that before I recorded the podcast. It's not, I won't sit here and act like I'm the one who's come up with this, but I agree. I do think it's pretty concerning that that's happened. The Pistons are rebuilding. They're not trying to win a ton of games. Like, the fact that they lost the game itself, it's not too big of a deal. Like, the loss in and of itself is not too big of a deal. But how these losses keep happening with basic fundamentals being messed up, I think that's pretty concerning. I'm not going to lie to you. That's concerning to me about what's going on, what's being said, and why is it not being processed between the ears? What's going on there? And the vet should definitely know it. Kojo should know that. Kojo should be making that rotation. Kojo's standing on the three-point line just watching the ball go up. He sees J-Dub right there in front of him. A young player makes that mistake, even then you're kind of like, come on, it's the last play of the game. You got to know to go to the rim and put a body on somebody and try to fight for that rebound. But then you may say, okay, it is what it is, a young player. A vet? I don't know, man. I don't know. Let me know what you guys think about that. Do you guys think it's pretty concerning that this continues to happen and now this specific play happens? Let me know what you guys think. Comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. Coming up, Jaden Ivey played another really good game. He fouled out, dealt with foul trouble again, which really held back what should have been an absolutely outstanding game from him, but still played another really good game. We'll talk about what we saw from him in this game. But first, I got to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, Ultimate Pro Basketball GM. Ultimate Pro Basketball GM is the coolest game I've played in a long time, especially on my phone. Of all the phone games I've ever played, I think this one definitely is the most fun. I've always thought that maybe I could be a good NBA GM, but as it turns out, it's not that easy. I haven't been that good at it at all. If you had the same thought and have fantasized about managing your own basketball franchise, go and download Ultimate Pro Basketball GM right now. This game allows you to manage every strategic aspect of a franchise, playing through seasons and leading your franchise and fans to glory as you build a historic dynasty. In this simulation, you're responsible for dealing with challenging personalities, hiring the right coaches and assistants, trading and training players, and making draft picks, navigating your franchise through free agency, the draft, and all the ups and downs of multiple seasons. All this in a challenging and realistic game world. Ultimate Pro Basketball GM is completely free and playable offline. Play on the go as you want, when you want to. I have struggled with this game. I've told you guys this many, many times. Haven't had much success. Again, I'm going to tell my listeners to go over to Lockdown Bulls and ask them what is their secret to this game, because they've won two championships over there. So go ahead over there, comment in their YouTube section and say, who sent you? What's going on? How are you guys winning? We need help. But to help you guys out, Locked On Pistons listeners get 100% free boost to their franchise when using the promo code Locked On in the game store. So make sure to check it out. To download the game, just visit probasketballgm.com, scan the code, or look it up on the app stores. That's probasketballgm.com. Ultimate Basketball GM. Start your dynasty today. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. That last play really is going to leave a sour taste in a lot of you guys' mouth. I already know it. Definitely a tough way to lose, man. You hate the fact that the Pistons keep losing that exact same way. I think I can remember at least 3 times it's happened. Maybe even more. It sucks that continues to be the way they lose sometimes, man. That's simple stuff you can avoid, man. That's stuff you should be avoiding happening. But let's move past that, man. Jane Ivey with another really good game for the Pistons. 24 points, 9 assists, 8 of 18 shooting, 5 of 8 from deep, and 3 of 3 from the free throw line. He did this in just 31 minutes of action because he fouled out in this game. He dealt with foul trouble in the first quarter, and then he also dealt with foul trouble in the third quarter. So this is now back-to-back games he's done this. He's dealt with foul trouble en route to having a really good game. Last game he had 32 points despite dealing with foul trouble. If he didn't deal with foul trouble and you got to play more minutes, he might have had a 40-point game last game. This game doesn't deal with foul trouble, can play some more minutes. We might have been looking at a 30-12 game from him. Like, he's playing really, really well, and it's just the foul trouble that are holding him back from really having some just eye-popping numbers. He's already playing really well. 24-9 is nothing to sneeze at. That's really damn good. But, like, if he was able to play more minutes and doesn't foul out, he might be having some real eye-popping numbers. But there's a specific type of play that he was pulling off tonight, a specific shot that he was doing tonight that I think is really intriguing and really good to see when thinking about the long-term future of Ivy with the Pistons, of Ivy and how he fits with other players, and how the Pistons can build an offense. And this is something that when scouting Jane Ivy last year, when I spoke with scouts, when we spoke with people on the podcast that, you know, paid attention to draft prospects, when we spoke with our own very own draft scouts at Locked On, when you read some of his scouting reports, one of the things they mentioned that he did at Purdue was off-ball movement threes. And what that means is you're not just catching shooting standstill threes. You're catching the ball of like a pin down coming off and turning towards the basket and shooting a three. You're rotating down. Like there was one shot he made tonight when he was on the wing. Someone drove baseline. He ran to the corner, caught it, and shot it while he was like fading away out of bounds. There's other, again, coming off a double screen, maybe wrap around the corner, come off a double screen and catch and shoot off the move. Those are off-ball movement threes. And those are incredibly valuable because not every three is created the same, and not every three attracts the same type of gravity. Just a catch-and-shoot three doesn't have as much gravity as a three like that. If you're just catch-and-shooting threes, it's likely because guys are driving to the rim and kicking out to you. So the gravity is being created off of the drive and kick, the penetration. If you're a great off-ball movement, three-point shooter, and the immediate example that I come up with or think of in recent time, I don't know why, but it's J.J. Redick when he was with the 76ers. When you are that lethal, and obviously you can do that with Steph and Clay and over in Golden State too. It's probably the same thing over there. But like with J.J. Redick, when I used to watch him in Philadelphia when he played with the Sixers with Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, etc., when they would run off-ball movement threes for him, those are so lethal because guys are usually trailing off of you, and that causes the guy who's defending the guy setting the screen to then come up and have to contest you, which one, either one, he doesn't contest and you get a clean look if you're able to hit that, or two, if he does come up, then it's just a simple touch pass to the guy rolling to the rim. Now you've created an advantage. Like, there's different gravities when it comes to creating three-point shots, just like with pull-up three-point shooting. Pull-up three-point shooting creates so much more gravity than just a catch-and-shoot three-point shooter would. So I say all of that to get to the point of, we saw Jane Ivey do that three times tonight. Three of his threes tonight were off-ball movement threes. And if he's able to actually do that, we haven't seen that much this year with him, because ever since Cade went down, he's been on ball a lot. And when he's been off ball, when Killian Hayes is running point guard, they don't really run a bunch of action off ball to get guys moving around. There's a lot of guys just standing around waiting for someone to create an advantage on a drive and then kick out. That's usually the Pistons offense is very bland. So they don't run that much. But tonight, he got three of those off-ball movement looks to go. And if he's able to do that, not only one, will he fit really well next to Cade. His catch-and-shoot numbers on open threes, he's in the top 15th percentile of the league in those. That already speaks to his ability to fit with Cade. How he was cutting off of Cade in the first 10 games make you think that he could be a really good off-ball player with him too. But then also, if he's able to really hit off-ball movement threes, not only will he fit with Cade, that also gives the Pistons a player that they haven't really had over the last few years of his magnitude. Now, they've had it with a Wayne Ellington. You know, Wayne Ellington used to come off downs, pin downs and off-ball screens and just hit or dribble handoffs with Blake Griffin, would just come right off and pull a fadeaway three. And sometimes you would see, if you watched the Pistons back then, especially with the dribble handoffs with Blake Griffin, Wayne Ellington was such a good off-ball movement three or three-point shooter, especially off dribble handoffs, that they would have the guy defending Blake would have to come up to Wayne Ellington, and Wayne Ellington would just drop a bounce pass off to Blake. And multiple times you'd see Blake just take advantage of that, and the Pistons would feast off of that kind of stuff. Same thing with Reggie Bullock. Reggie Bullock, you got a lot of that too when he was here with Blake in I think it was 18-19 when they used to run that over and over. When you have a guy who's capable of hitting off-ball moving threes, especially off dribble handoffs and stuff, it creates a different type of gravity and forces defenses to guard you differently. And that in and of itself creates advantages for your offense, for your other teammates to take advantage of. And I think this is the overall point here. The more players and the different types of ways that the Pistons have to take it to create advantages for other people, the more lethal your offense will be. If you look at all the great offenses across the NBA, they don't just, I mean, I guess maybe Luka in Dallas before. I mean, I'm sure some Dallas fans maybe who watch them every night would probably push against this. But from an outside point of view, maybe Dallas before they got Kyrie, all of it was just created off of Luka ISOs and him kicking out and stuff. Outside of that, most of the elite offenses can have multiple things that create advantages for the for their teammates. For example, like Denver with Jokic. Jokic can create advantages off the post-up. The fact he can create advantages running inverted pick and rolls with like a guard. The fact that a Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic pick and roll can create an advantage. Jamal Murray as a pull-up shooter can create advantage. Him coming off off-ball screens. Like the more your best players have skills that create advantages for your teammates, it will make your offense even more lethal. And the fact that you're seeing that a little bit in this game, I think is really impressive and really intriguing from Jane Ivey, especially because it was something we were told he did at Purdue. So I'm really interested, and I hope. I absolutely hope. If it's Dwayne Casey next year, I hope he changes. If it's a different coach, I hope it's a really creative offensive mind. Because if Jane Ivey has that in his game, it's something that 100% should be incorporated into the offense and should be used. 100%. If it's not, it's malpractice. If he actually has it in his game. Now, we've only seen it in this game. He hasn't got many opportunities. But I'm saying if they try to do this, like maybe let's say they try doing this more throughout the rest of the season, or they see how he does it throughout the offseason. They feel confident in it. If they don't incorporate that into their offense next year, that would be malpractice. That would, you just not doing something that would help you on purpose. I don't get it. So I'm interested to see how they do it next year, what they run their offense with, and if Jane Ivey actually can do that. Again, people who watched him in college said he did it a lot with Purdue. We've seen it happen in this game against the Thunder. He shot really well, and he's overall shot really well on just open catch and shoot threes. So his three-point shooting is believable, I feel like. If the off-ball movement threes are good too, whew. Not only does that make Jane Ivey's ceiling even higher, dude. Not only does that make his three or his overall play ceiling even higher, that could make the Pistons offense lethal, dude. That can make it really, really lethal. Especially if you're setting like off-ball screens or doing like dribble handoffs with Durant. Imagine if Ivey gets to a point where he's coming off dribble handoff with Jalen Durant, that guys have to come up and contest the shot, and now he's dropping it off to Jalen Durant. 4-on-3 advantage now with his passing ability. Oh my goodness, dude. I can just see it now. It would be so beautiful. It would just be so beautiful. So I hope that we get to see more of this for the rest of the year. Just see if it actually is real. To see if it's actually something he has. And if he does, it's going to be fun to see, man. It's going to be fun to see. I think every single game you're seeing more and more stuff to make you a believer in the Pistons young core, make you more excited. Jane Ivey just keeps whipping new stuff out every game, man. And it's impressive stuff, dude. So let me know what you guys think about that, what you guys saw from Jane Ivey. Did the off-ball movement threes from him catch your guys' attention? Let me know that. Comment section down below or over on Twitter at KookaHill. Coming up, I want to talk about something we saw from Marvin Bagley tonight, which was really impressive. And just overall, Marvin Bagley's play as of late. And maybe Jalen Duren rubbing off on some of his bigs. We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, got to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, FanDuel Sportsbook. The tournament is heating up, and there's no better place to get in on the action than FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. That's because right now, FanDuel is giving new customers a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Just go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up today to claim your no-sweat first bet. Then you can wager on everything from the money line to point spreads to which team will be cutting down the net. All on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. So don't miss your shot and a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. Just go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up today. Again, make sure you don't miss your shot. The no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel. Just head to FanDuel.com/LockedOn to sign up today. Make every moment more with FanDuel. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We're free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. Real quickly, I didn't mention a key point to that entire last segment. The reason why it would be such a game changer for someone of Jane Ivey's magnitude of him as a player to add that off-ball movement three stuff to his game is that he's such an explosive player on drives too, that if he's coming off an off-ball screen and guys have to come up on that because they think he can hit it, he's explosive and crazy enough as an athlete that he could just zoom around them then himself and create the advantage with his guy trailing behind him. And then if he gets into the lane, that's even scarier too. So he would just be scary from all three levels at that point. And if he is at all three levels, especially off-ball too, That's a crazy player. I don't know why I forgot to say that part. That's the part that really makes it crazy. Because for the examples I said, like a Wayne Ellington and Reggie Bullock, that's all they were doing. They weren't going to put the ball then on the ground and try to take advantage of the guy trailing behind them. It was either I'm shooting this three if the guy doesn't come up on me, or I'm passing it back to Blake for a dribble handoff or whatever. If Jane Ivey's coming off it, his guy's trending, or not trending, but trailing behind him, and let's say whoever's setting the screen, his guy doesn't come up, but the guy behind Jane Ivey has enough of a body on him to where he doesn't feel comfortable taking the shot on the catch. He's absolutely explosive enough and good enough finisher and good, or eventually a good enough finisher and a good enough passer and an explosive athlete to then just explode into the lane. And now you got dribble penetration just like that. And that right there, even of itself, creates advantages for your teammates and driving kicks and stuff. I'm telling you, man, that if that's legit, that would be a crazy part of Jane Ivey's game. Just crazy. And would elevate the Pistons offense. But anyways, enough of that. I had to make sure I said that part, though, because that was like a key point, and I forgot to mention it. But Marvin Bagley, just real quickly, I've been really impressed with some of the things we're seeing from Marvin Bagley as a face-up four from a dribble drive standpoint. He hit 1-3 tonight. He's still not shooting very well in the season. He hit 4 threes the other night, so that helps his percentages over the last few games. You guys know I'm not too big of a believer at all in him as a three-point shooter, but what he's doing as a dribble driver, finishing around the rim, drawing fouls, excuse me, on drives, that's legit. Another part that we saw him do tonight, he was making some nice driving kicks. When he would get the ball in a post-up on a switch with the guard on him, he wasn't just going instantly to score. He was recognizing the pressure coming to him. He was recognizing the double coming for him, and he was openly looking for kickouts. He was openly looking for guys cutting to the rim and guys that were open. That's impressive stuff. It's not some crazy thing, but that's big time. Especially, that's something you have to do. If you're going to be someone who tries to post up, or you want your post up or your face up game to be a part of an offense, you have to be able to make teams pay when they focus on the scoring. Because if you can't do that, it's a waste of possession, basically. Bagley was doing that on multiple occasions just now. Again, it goes back to creating advantages for your teammates. Bagley was creating advantages by posting up guards because it was forcing OKC to then come double him. And instead of him forcing shots and not taking advantage of that, he was creating the advantage for his teammates, ending with 3 assists in the game in 23 minutes. He might have had even more assists if guys hit shots. That's really impressive for me from Bagley. I'm going to say this, man. You guys know I wasn't too big on Bagley. And even still, if he can't shoot threes, I said this a few podcasts ago, it's hard for me to envision how exactly you can. It's cool. It's good to see this, no doubt. It's just hard for me to figure, okay, how can you then piece that into a winning team? And we've talked about this before many times. You'd have to get like the right five next to him. If you get the perfect five next to him, then you can really take advantage of it. He'd be fine. But you'd have to do that. If his three-point shot comes along, he actually does become a shooter, then he's even more valuable. But man, look, despite my concerns or worries about Bagley being able to fit with the winning when the Pistons are trying to win because of his limitations as a shooter, despite that, he's played really well lately. And to be honest, when he's been able to play long minutes without injury or whatever, to be honest, I think he's probably been largely impressive this year. Now, I don't think he's been worth the $13 million, partly because of injury and some of his weaknesses. But, I mean, I can't lie. I think he's been impressive in some of his minutes, man. This improved passing that I saw tonight, that right there is seeing, like, Jalen Duren make these passes and be like, oh, that's I can do that. If guys are going to double me, I can create this for a teammate of mine. Wiseman doesn't do that yet. That's his biggest weakness for me. Wiseman just refuses to pass on post-ups, and he just forces shots up. Bagley did a really good job tonight of not just shooting every single time and finding his guys open. I feel like he only had 3 rebounds tonight, and I don't think he's a great rebounder, but I think he's hustling on the glass a lot more than he ever has. I think he's fighting a lot more on the glass than he ever has. And to be honest, I think he's been really smart this year most of the time. I don't think a lot of his weakness. I think before his weaknesses, you could attribute some of them to, okay, maybe he doesn't know what he's doing here, or he doesn't have the best, you know, IQ in this situation. I don't feel like that's the case this year with Bagley. I feel like Bagley, his weaknesses are just from things he just can't, he's just not talented enough to do, like shooting. He's not a good enough shooter. Like, that's just, it is what it is. Defensively, he tries on the defensive end. He gives it everything he has, I feel like. He may just not be a good defender. He may just not have the tools to be a good defender. He tries his ass off, for sure. So I'll say this. Bagley is making a fan out of me. I love the fact that we're seeing increment improvements from him in multiple areas throughout games. I love the fact that he's trying his ass off constantly. I love the fact that he's trying to get as physical as possible. He's fighting, man, and I can respect that. So, you know, I don't like the too big lineup. The too big lineup's been awful. We've talked about the numbers with it. It's been terrible. But Bagley himself as a player, he's making me a believer in him when it comes to betting on his development, because he's trying, man. He's trying, and you're seeing little improvements. I like that. I really like seeing that from him. So the passing tonight was impressive. I love seeing that, and that's a good step in the right direction for Bagley. I hope to see some more of that throughout the rest of the year, combined with his really, I think I don't want to say elite, but it's been really damn good, his ability to drive to the rim and finish too. So combine both those things, that's pretty valuable. And if he actually adds the three, that's a really good offensive player. That's a valuable offensive player, and he definitely would be in your rotation. That's a lot of ifs, but he's showing some of that lately, and I got to give him credit for that. I like what I'm seeing. I like what I'm seeing. And again, I want to say this one more time. He's fighting his ass off. I cannot accuse him of not trying and wanting to be better, which is really what's making me a fan of his, that he wants to get better, and you're seeing these little improvements that make you realize that really showcase that he is trying to get better. He's working on this stuff. You can want to get better, but not actually put in the work. The fact that you're seeing these little increment improvements from him in these little tiny areas tells me that he wants to get better, and he's actually working at it and trying to. So I like what I'm seeing from Bagley lately. Don't know where it'll get him or how far he can go, but he's impressing me. He's making a fan out of me. So let me know what you guys think about that, what you've seen from Bagley lately, in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kukahill. Thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. Free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. And until next time, I'll see you guys later. Stay safe. Go Pistons. And peace out.